So let me get this straight. Marco Bezzecchi wins the sprint race for the last two weekends, and then we get a new winner as a result. There's still hope for Luca Marini. Welcome back to Motorsport 101.
They won't call it the Honda Motor Company for nothing. They kind of did this weekend.
You know what's kind of wild? 18 out of the 22 riders on the MotoGP grid now have won at least one Grand Prix. Welcome to episode 622 of Motorsport 101. I'm your friendly neighborhood host, Dre Harrison, and I love a weird stat, clearly. In the second part of this doubleheader, we're going to be talking all about MotoGP's blue ribbon event, the golden boy of races that isn't named Le Mans. It's Phillip Island. We love Phillip Island.
Best track on the planet.
They love Phillip Island. You love Phillip Island. And we had a good Phillip Island race. Not a great one, if I'm being honest, but a good one nonetheless. Even Phillip Island can raise the floor of a pretty middle-of-the-road MotoGP season for actual drama. And we had a very fun chasing group in that one. We had a pretty good Australian Grand Prix, and we're going to break it down over the next half an hour or so, because for the second week in a row and for the first time in 5 years, we have back-to-back brand new race winners in MotoGP. And it's not the one you're thinking of. Pedro Acosta is going to be pounding so much sand on the flight to Sepang. This time, it was Raul Fernandez's turn to win his first Grand Prix. Who had odds on that at the start of the season?
I say, can you check the odds on that? Because they have to be astounding.
I wish I could. We wouldn't have like a first win specific market, but he's the sort of guy that would be getting 500-1 odds every weekend to win a Grand Prix going into it. Just ridiculous to think that. We've had seven different winners in MotoGP this season, and two of them are brand new, and they probably weren't the two you were thinking of. With Fermín Albiol,
consecutive,
yeah. First, I took the stats on this. First time in 5 years we've had back-to-back brand new winners in MotoGP. The last time, anybody want to have a quick guess?
Before that, not in a pandemic year.
It wasn't the pandemic year. If that's a hint.
Mir.
Yes.
And
he won before Mir did.
Was it Frankie?
It was Frankie. Yes.
Hey!
Frankie Morbidelli won his first Grand Prix in Aragon. It was called, I think, the Turkle Grand Prix, because they did the doubleheader, and the second race is named after the region Grand Prix. And then Mir won in Valencia a week later.
I love Styria.
Yeah. I'm a fan of that Styrian Grand Prix, as you do. See, that was the last time we had back-to-back brand new winners in MotoGP. 5 years, and we've got another new set on this one to break down. So we'll talk about how Raul Fernandez did it, how Marco Bezzecchi didn't do it, another curious tale of the continuing the deer that is Pecco Bagnaia. Oh boy, more on that soon. But joining me as ever, as you probably already guessed by now, RJ O'Connell.
Hi everybody, I was at an 8-hour race that effectively had 4 hours of racing, but it doesn't matter because I got to see a prolific two-wheeled athlete do something very special at Indianapolis Motor Speedway, because Valentino Rossi is now the first athlete in the 110-year history of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway to win a main event race on two wheels and four, and both of them happened in races that were impacted by bad weather.
Yeah, as one does. Although I must admit, even though I will never claim to be a Valentino Rossi fan, that is quite cool. I can't deny it, to be able to win it in, to kiss the yard of bricks as a bike rider and as a GT racer must be quite the trip.
Yeah. It's not as much of a trip as a championship deciding reordering of the cars under safety car to reset the 65-minute maximum stint length. But Whoops. It is kind of cool.
It is kind of cool. Not gonna lie. And also joining us is Mr. Cameron Buckley. Hello, Cam.
Ironic that we talk about that on the 10-year anniversary of, I don't know, something that happened in Southeast Asia.
A foot that slipped off the peg that the world got to see.
Wow. Can't imagine that had any ramifications.
Yeah, someone should write a book about that.
Someone really should. Should get on that, Dre.
Yeah. Only the second most watched moment in motorsport history behind Marc Marquez aura farming in the Saxon Ring earlier this year. Yeah, that has overtaken Sepang's highlight reel.
Shut the fuck up. There ain't no way.
Yeah, like, I believe, like, I think Marc Marquez's aura farm is now, like, something like 110 million views on Instagram now, and it's, I know Toprax, when he won at Donington, was up there as well for, like, 70 or 80 million views. That's why they invited the same kid to Mandalika earlier this year. Yeah, that got a obscene amount of views. Like, the internet is a strange and mysterious thing. I don't envy anyone who's a social media manager. I'll tell you that.
127 million for the peg slip, the foot slipping off the peg.
Wait for it. We'll wait. I think it's close.
922K.
No, there's Marc Marquez. There's definitely a comparison one that was at like 70 or 80 million.
Oh, were they comparing this on TikTok?
No, Instagram.
Oh, okay. I'm just going off of YouTube stuff.
Yeah.
This is my one true North Star.
That's the most boomer RJ's ever sounded on this podcast. Like, what is the video view count on this?
Hey, at least we're not checking Quibi.
Because that bitch is dead. Dead, and more dead. Just like Peko Bagnaia's season, really. So we'll talk a little bit about that, some more injury updates. Moto3 is getting a rebrand. More on that soon as well. And hang on a minute. It says here on the race that Phillip Island might be chalked off the calendar after
No.
But I mean, we know you have history. I mean, that can't be... Oh.
Who do I have to kill? That's all I will say.
Dracula from Dracula Flow.
We'll talk about that in the next half an hour, 40 minutes or so. But in the meantime, please, you can find us real quick. We're on youtube.com/motorsport101 for full episodes on there. We're on facebook.com/motorsport101. We're on Twitter at motorsport_101. If you want to follow us personally, you can do so on Blue Sky at Dre Harrison, RJ O'Connell, and at cbuckley917.bsky.social. You can follow us on Instagram, motorsport101pod. You can follow us on TikTok at m101_podcast. And you can get all of those details and more on our website, motorsport101.com, including full written reviews of both this race and Formula One's bumper weekend in Austin. And if you really, really like us, you can follow us and back us financially on Patreon, patreon.com/motorsport101. We've got Discord access the moment you sign up, as well as $5 getting all of our early content for free before it goes live to the public. You can upgrade to the $10 tier to listen to these episodes live as they're being recorded, including Raptor, including Kira, Jason, and Vic, all watching along. Thank you very much, guys, for your continued support. So, without further ado, let's get into the Blue Ribbon event of the MotoGP calendar, MotoGP's Australian Grand Prix.
As we mentioned, for the second time in two weekends, Marco Bezzecchi won a sprint race, but then we got a new MotoGP Grand Prix race winner. Bez was the favorite, even with another miraculous Fabio Quartararo pole position on Saturday. I don't know how he does it, but miraculous. In the Grand Prix, it was Raul Fernandez. Raul Fernandez coming off of finishing second in the sprint, who had a perfect race. He pulled away from the chasing pack. He got a 3-second gap out front. Fabio Di Giantonio got up to second late and attempted to chase it down, but he just ran out of time and laps down the stretch. Bezzecchi was third. Di Giantonio was second. Bezzecchi recovered, of course, from his double long lap penalty for his crash in Mandalika, put the pliers and blowtorch down, Cameron Buckley.
Never. Never.
You're turning into all those people that were sending Sterling Marlin death threats. You don't want to be that guy.
I'm not sending it to him. I'm just saying it.
Okay. So, back a minute. Dre, I believe we had discussions on numerous season previews like, is Raul Fernandez ever going to get it together in MotoGP? Because the potential is always there, and it's never realized, but now he's got a Grand Prix win. Has he finally arrived?
He might have. I mean, it's hard not to talk about Raul Fernandez without talking about how he came through the juniors and the story of his career so far. So a little retrospective, I think, would help here. Once upon a time, this was a man who was getting comparisons to Marc Marquez, and justifiably so. He was a one-and-done Moto2 rider back in 2020. The pandemic year, he was part of the greatest Moto2 season, the greatest Moto2 team we've ever seen in a single season. You might remember it was the team of him and Remy Gardner. And that Red Bull KTM team completely destroyed the field in Moto2 that year. They won 13 out of 18 races that season. They had the team's title wrapped up in September. I think it was four or five rounds early in Aragon they won it that year. So they were just so dominant. Raul Fernandez broke a Marc Marquez record, the most wins in a single season ever by a Moto2 rookie. He won eight that year. He beat him Marquez's seven. But he didn't win the championship. One DNF too many. There was two big crashes, one at Misano, one in Germany. Ultimately, Remy Gardner, who was a little bit more consistent, won that title by 4 points. Understandably, KTM bumped them both up into the Tech 3 satellite team together, keep that partnership going. But there was a catch. The catch was that Raul was already being courted by Yamaha. And Yamaha was prepared to pay, I think it was a 450,000 euro break clause in his contract to get him immediately. Raul wanted to move to Yamaha. God bless him.
KTM refused the money.
KTM refused. They wanted to keep their S-tier prospect. Again, understandable.
Very understandably.
But Raul didn't like it. So he and KTM got off on the wrong foot when they got to MotoGP, and it all kind of fell apart. Remy Gardner was a one and done in MotoGP because he was having some poor results, and his dad, Wayne Gardner, that Wayne Gardner, called KTM's management a clown and a circus show on social media.
Now, one, not a great move to keep your son employed, but also, I don't think he could have ever imagined how right he actually was, given how KTM has gone down these last few years.
He wasn't wrong, but you literally didn't have to say it.
He really shouldn't have said it.
Yeah,
I believe the phrase is, when keeping it real goes wrong.
Yeah. Wayne was being a bit overbearing as a father, shall we say. And Remy was let go. Raul Fernandez was let go because he didn't get along with the management and he wanted to pursue other ventures. By this point, Yamaha had already moved on. And the best that Raul could do was the RNF crypto data team. Funny money. You gotta love it. And they were running customer Aprilias in 2022.
On money that didn't exist.
And you know, that's the great thing about funny money. It's not actually a real thing. And that's what led to a lot of drama internally back when Raslan Razali was still a MotoGP team owner. He gave up a majority stake of that team to some Romanian crypto bros who then didn't honor the payments. And then Dorna took their grid slots away when they didn't play ball. So that team got shunted, a lot of people were let go, and it became what we now know as Trackhouse.
It's not very often that the organizing body of your sport has to claim force majeure to kick your ass out.
Yes.
Yeah, normally F1 received that shit for Andre and Moda back in 92. And I know that story's been told to death, but it bears repeating.
Yeah, there's many a YouTuber that will get many an AI voice to read out the Wikipedia article on that shit. But, yeah, they became the artists we now know as Trackhouse. Justin Marks, as we all know, was put in a boatload of money to rebrand and restore that team. They brought in Davide Brivio to basically run it. And, look, 2024 was probably the first time we really saw even a flash of what Raul Fernandez could be in the top flight. Remember that sprint race in Catalunya? The one that he led briefly and was pulling away from the field on, only to tuck the front at turn 10 and have a spectacular crash. Yeah, I remember that. That was Raul Fernandez. And I was starting at this point to wonder whether he was ever going to be that guy, the guy that we saw in Moto2 and think, holy shit, this dude's special. At the time, I genuinely thought they were better off keeping Miguel Oliveira at Trackhouse over him. I thought they made the wrong decision to let Miggy walk and then to keep Raul, and as they brought in Ayagura, who was obviously last year's Moto2 champion. But, man, I think you'd agree with me on this one, Cam. This year, I think Raul has genuinely turned the corner as a rider. At least it feels that way.
Yeah, second half of this year has been a consistent, like, just a little better and a little better, seemingly every weekend. And kind of as the Aprilia has gone, and as Bezzecchi has been challenging at the front, he was challenging Marc Marquez until he very suddenly won that challenge. Raul's been kind of creeping up the points, and I mean, in Indonesia, he really should have got a better result than he did. He threw away what really could have been a second or third place through being a little too over aggressive when he had the speed and he had the time.
Yeah,
this weekend, another case of Bez not winning when he probably should have, but this time Raul was able to not only pick up the pieces, but kind of just scamper off onto a nice, easy Sunday ride.
You'll never describe a Phillip Island race as that, per se, normally, but yeah, it really was as simple as that. He got the whole shot. He passed Pedro Acosta early on. Acosta didn't have the tire and the pace to stay. This was a genuine tire management race. Phillip Island, I think an element of it that people don't talk about as much is that it's generally a tire shredder. It's got a diamond cut surface. It's very abrasive. It's very harsh on tires. We've had many a altered, shortened race as a result of how nasty that surface can be at Phillip Island. In fact, obviously, because it's got so many long, flowing corners, it's great to ride around. Tires hate it. So it turns into a game of attrition quite quickly when it comes to managing your tire. And there was a hint that this was coming, because I remember seeing, I don't know if anybody watches MotoGP on social media, but they do this thing where the top three for the sprint now get in one of the cars on the way from Parc Fermé to the podium. And Raul said in that van, I was like, look, I was doing like friggin' 35.8s, 35.9s at the end of that race. My tire was finished. I've got to take more care tomorrow. Turns out he did. Because he was second in that sprint, and then he rode a perfect race. Like, it was perfectly executed. Ripped off that big lead, did enough to withstand the oncoming storm at the end of that race, because there were a couple of dudes going a bit quicker by the race's end, but by then it was just too late at that point, really.
Yeah, I mean, to talk about Digi Antonio a little bit, if he qualified better, he probably could have won this race.
Pace was great
on that. Yeah, he was bad fast in sprint trim and in race trim. Another curious case of the Ducati GP25, which we'll expand on later, because oh my god, there's always a newer, rockier bottom. But yeah, like, Fabio was just running him down near the end. To the other Fabio, you know, it's bad that I said before the race start, Quartararo is going to be fifth before turn one. I called it right on the money.
Oh. How does that man sleep at night with that Yamaha?
Why won't you rev?
Why won't you turn?
It won't do anything at this point. But yeah, like, Bez takes his two long laps, he actually really didn't have the pace to go out and run away and actually gap the field to have a good spot to, you know, slot in with his long laps. So he just did not have enough pace to get through the field quickly enough to go back after the race win. And Raul had enough of a gap at the end that I would say 2 to 3 laps to go, he was probably just managing at home.
I do wonder if they told Bez after what happened in Mandalika to take it a little easy on that one, given how aggressive he was. During the Indonesia race, I said he panicked. I think he saw that Marquez was in front of him and he panicked, and that's what led to that big crash. I think Bez was actually quite conservative during that Grand Prix, and that he didn't try and force the issue. He didn't try and just jam it down somebody's throat on this occasion. He was very measured in trying to get past that chasing group of him, Dijia, Alex Marquez was up there. Luca Marini was up there for a little bit as well. It just didn't quite... I think he had the pace if he was in open air, but he spent so much time in traffic. He lost 3 or 4 seconds in that chase group while Fernandez was pulling away, and then his race was over. Especially because apparently Aprilia said on Saturday, we're aiming for 4th with Bez. We're aiming for 4th, and they actually got 3rd. It's why they were so happy with him when he got into Parc Fermé. So I don't know. Maybe the conservative approach is what works best with Bez. I don't know. Is it weird to say that he's only got 1 Grand Prix win this year, given how strong he's been on occasions this season? It just doesn't feel like he's only won 1 Grand Prix this year. It's weird.
It's increasingly a case of why not Bez? Bez. He does it to himself a lot. Incredible speed on that Aprilia. And the Aprilia is maybe just lacking a little bit of raw horsepower. Because it did take him a little bit to get through the faster bikes in a straight line. But it was bad fast here. But two long lap penalties.
I'm telling you, Mr. Buckley, this Aprilia is no joke anymore. I've been telling you this for a few weekends now, that I think Aprilia is on the level of Ducati, and the concessions are doing their job. It is bringing the field together. I'm enjoying this.
I don't know if they would have won this race if Fabio had a not terrible qualifying, because he had an atrocious qualifying. I also don't know if Marc Marquez was here, but hey, I guess we'll never know. Thanks, Bez.
Yes, as Fernandez takes his Wittes trophy in the air and then runs off the stage.
Speaking of Ducati.
Yeah.
Same brain cell, which appears to be more than what's going on one side of the Ducati garage. Well,
are we doing this shit again?
Let me get this straight. Over the past 4 weekends, Pecco Bagnaia has scored 0 points, maximum points, 0 points, and 0 points.
What the fuck is going on here?
He was objectively outperformed by Michele Pirro across this weekend because he crashed in the Grand Prix.
Michele Pirro, who is 147 years old and puts me to sleep every time they wheel him out. I'm sorry, bro. Thank you for your years of service. Let Nicola Bulliga do the wild cards when he's free.
Well, he couldn't because he was busy this weekend. But
busy attempting what? To kill Toprak.
More on that later. But yeah, it's...
He failed.
There was a great moment, and I will give my credit to Mr. Simon Patterson because it came from him. There was a great moment that they said that when Michele Pirro first arrived to Phillip Island in his biking career, Fermin Aldeguer hadn't been born yet. And you could just see there's a picture of Pirro's just mopey face when he realizes that. And it's just like, it's just,
That actually reminds me, today's the 22nd, right?
Yeah.
It is the 22nd, yes. Remember, it's the 36th anniversary of the funny thing that happened at Suzuka.
35-year anniversary of Pearl Jam's debut. I have a better anniversary for you. If you turn into a legal adult after today, you haven't seen a Ferrari World Championship.
What does this have to do about Pecco Bagnaia?
Just go back to like 6 years ago when Dre used to do like a rant on Ferrari every two weekends.
I don't have Pecco anymore either. The thing is, there was a giveaway as to where this weekend was going, where like first practice in FP1 on what was Thursday night in my household, because obviously it's Australia, because it's Phillip Island.
Time zones are a funny
motherfucker.
And make it work.
Like Pecco Bagnaia came out, used his number one bike, did one lap, and then went straight back in the garage again. It was like, no, get me the other bike. Like, ooh, that should have been the sign right there that this weekend was not going to go to plan. And the funny thing is that he actually wasn't bad on Friday. He got into Q2 automatically. He was ninth in practice. I thought, okay, this is salvageable. It's not too bad. And then nowhere. Sprint, nowhere. Falls down the field again. And then Grand Prix drops all the way down to, I think, 18th or 19th place. I think he was only in front of Iagura, who was just coming back from injury. And then he bins it. At the Melbourne Loop at Turn 2. Weird place to crash. Doesn't happen very often over there. Oh.
0 points, 37 points, 0 points, 0 points. His last four results in MotoGP. I think we can stop calling this a GP25 problem at this point. I think we can stop calling this a GP whatever problem.
Probably.
You know what I think? In my, you know, I haven't ridden a motorcycle in like a few years, sitting on my bed at home opinion. I think he's trying to chase the feeling he had in Motegi so badly that anything less than that, he just can't ride the bike right now. And that is not a good place to be.
I think I'd actually go one further. I think he's been tinkering so much since the start of this season. I don't think he knows what a good setup is anymore.
Like, Dre, why am I getting reminded of, like, whenever Peter Wright has a bad day at the darts? He's always tinkering. He'll always do that when he's successful. Like, that's the reason why he's a two-time world champion. But, like, when he's not, like, doing well and he's just, like, changing the stems, changing the flights, etc., and it's just not working out great, I don't know why I thought of this.
It's perfect. He's chasing his own tail. It's like, it feels like he started this year okay. But he started this year getting clapped by Marc Marquez, as most teammates do. That's a way of life in MotoGP. And I think he panicked. And I think he has chased the rabbit so hard in trying to fix whatever he does not like that he's just lost.
I mean,
and he doesn't know how to get back. And his team doesn't know how to get him back either. They gave him exactly what he wanted in Japan. They gave him as much of a GP24 as they possibly could. They reverted the ride height device, and he's on the same bike now, and he scored 0 points the last two weekends.
But the thing is, right, and this is the point I was going to make, here was Pecco's Grand Prix results the first half of the season up to the summer break.
Mm-hmm.
Third, fourth, one at Kota, second in Qatar, third, was taken out of Le Mans, finished 16th. Silverstone, that was the one crash he had in that first half of the year. Third, fourth, third, third. There's a handful of these rounds where he was right in Mark's wheelhouse. Only maybe a second or two behind. That's not bad. That's not a terrible place to be by any stretch of the imagination. That's close enough where you go, if you have a good day and it all runs perfectly, maybe you can beat him. You weren't far off. But I suspect because Bagnaia is a perfectionist and because he's such a Goldilocks rider, he was probably trying to find that last one or two temps that would really put him on Marquez's footing and, you know, get him into what might be a long shot title fight. But as you say, Cam, I think he's been chasing that golden carrot so hard and for so long, I just think he's in complete development hell. He's got the yips. He doesn't know what makes him fast anymore. Yeah. He's
like, when you see him fly onto the main straight and the bike is shuddering under him because they've got, like, he's trying to chase how the bike was set up in Motegi.
Mm.
And he's trying so hard to run before he can walk, they just keeps falling down. And it's at the point where, like, nothing other than the bike being utterly perfect under him is going to work for him anymore. And that's, his Ducati career is going to end if it keeps going like this.
That was going to be my next point. How much longer is this tenable? Like, the Ducati's like looking frustrated.
The fact that Marc Marquez is out right now, probably to the end of the year, because they did end up doing surgery on that damaged collarbone, just more for their own precaution than anything. And it's not like Marc has a whole lot to play for right now. I mean, Alex took a chunk out of him, but I think he'll wrap up this championship soon enough.
Sure.
The fact that we went into this weekend going, yeah, Ducati are screwed, when they have a two-time world champion on the other bike.
A two-time champion with 31 top flight wins, the same as Danny Pedrosa, the same as, I think, Eddie Lawson also has 31 top flight Grand Prix victories. Kieran makes a great point in our chat. He walked in, started talking, and Tardozzi walked away from him. I think there's already a sign.
There's needle.
There's tension there, and that I think everybody is just fed up with each other at this point. And, like, we've seen how Luigi Deligna has been with riders in the past. He told Andrea Dovizioso to take a pay cut or fuck off back in 2020.
He told Jorge Lorenzo, we're not re-signing you. And they gave him the gas tank he wanted. He won two out of three races.
Yeah.
They
gamble
on are quite merciless.
Yeah,
that did not work out at all.
No.
Not even a little bit. They are very merciless with riders. But forget being merciless. It'd be like a mercy killing at this point to get him out of this contract. I can't believe how bad it's gone in half a season. Because the first half of the season, like, yeah, he's a little bit off a mark. This is kind of what I expected out of the season. The second half, he's been arguably the worst rider on the MotoGP grid. He crashed trying to catch Sankhya Chandra, who just got told to kick rocks.
Bagnaia since the summer break. 4th, 8th, 9th, 7th, DNF, Motegi victory, DNF, DNF. That's pretty
bad.
This
is not sustainable.
And
we ever seen... Even when things went south with Yamaha with Vinales, it wasn't this bad.
No. The results weren't dreadful. Like, it was... Okay, they were briefly, but then that was accelerated by Maverick completely losing his head.
he tried to blow a motorcycle.
It hasn't gotten to that
up.
Point with Bagnaia, and the difference between Maverick and Yamaha is that Pecco's won shit.
Pecco's won two world titles. He was their mercurial talent who got them back over the hump.
He's the most successful Ducati rider ever.
Not buy you some benefit of the doubt even when you are having clearly a bad year? You can just forget this whole thing happened, reset, run it back in 2026.
You're right, RJ.
It has to play out. It has to play out in the results.
You're right, RJ, to a degree. Just one problem. They've given Alex Marquez a 26 next year. There's a reason for that. They want insurance.
And they have Fermín Aldeguer. and they have Fabio DiGiantonio on a factory prepped bike already.
Remember, Fermin Aldeguer is guaranteed a factory bike in year three of his agreement if they keep him at the end of 26.
And right now, on current form, I'd keep him.
Sure, why not?
He's been great. It's we talked like a couple episodes ago about like I could not have expected Mark to beat him this badly. The first half of this year is exactly what I expected. This is completely unsustainable.
Bez has now overtaken him for third in the standings. He's 8 points in front with 3 weekends left. Acosta is 41 points behind. Like, fifth might be on the cards for Bagnaia this season, the way the scoreboard's looking.
That would be like an unimpeachable black mark on his career.
Yeah.
I'll be real with you.
No doubt about it.
Even more than him getting busted over the summer that one time and him going on to win a world championship.
Absolutely.
Above that.
Yeah.
You think the Italians give a shit about that?
They thought that was a personality trait.
Getting your legs broken? Damn.
It builds character. I do not seriously think this, by the way. Just to clarify.
I was going to say, you're just every old MotoGP head on the socials.
I wasn't talking about the dislocated shoulder.
That's a man's sport.
I wasn't talking about him getting his legs run over. I'm just saying that I was talking about that time he had one too many to go on the road with.
That too.
Oh, yes, that one.
He drove and ended up in a hedge. That's just funny to some people. It really isn't.
But yeah, they would shed if a Ferrari driver did that, he'd be hailed as a hero.
It's quirky.
It's I can't believe how bad it's gone. In the biggest Pecco hater's heart, I could not imagine any of them getting to this stage.
No way you throw the panic button into unless this shit happens again in 26.
Well, they're better than 20. The 20. And the thing is, right, the way the field is right now, this 26 has to be good. Aprilia will punish them more often if this keeps up.
Oh, for sure.
Like,
there's no question about that.
Like, Bez has been good enough to run right with Marc Marquez multiple times this season. And look, if you give Jorge Martin a full off season, I have no doubt he'll be up there too. We saw at Ballaton Park how fast he was. Like, I could see a future where Aprilia's got two bullets in the chamber and a very fast bike. Like, they need to get this one right next time round, because if they don't, with the concessions and Aprilia gunning them down, I think 26 could genuinely be very interesting. Need to see a bit more body of work, but it's getting there for Aprilia.
A lot more out of Aprilia, because like at the same time, as soon as Aprilia loses those concessions, what do Aprilia turn into?
We'll have to wait and see.
We just don't know yet.
But if Trackhouse can legitimately win a race on merit, no shenanigans, no questions asked, they've got to be doing something right.
Oh, absolutely.
No doubt about it. This was a big story coming out of the race this past weekend. And it was a shock to a lot of us on Discord when we were reading about this. That
it was a shock to anybody that's a motorcycle racing fan, even a casual one.
Yeah, that's essentially the Australian Grand Prix itself at Phillip Island. It might be going the way of the Dodo after the... because they've got 1 year left on its current deal. It expires in 2026. There's a lot of strong talk that it will not be coming back.
Why?
The main reason... Look, I absolutely hate this too, for the record. The main reason is it's an infrastructure thing. For those guys who might be new to bike racing or maybe aren't the most educated MotoGP fan in the world, a quick catch-up. They gave Phillip Island a 10-year extension back in 2016. Now, those sorts of extensions are a lot more common now in Formula 1 and in MotoGP. They like tying down rounds to big commitments. part of the reason why they like tying these places down to long commitments is because, in Phillip Island's case, there was promise they were going to renovate and improve the infrastructure at Phillip Island to make it a more palatable Grand Prix experience for everybody, tried to get the attendance up a little bit more as well in future years. And the hope was, over the course of that 10-year security blanket of guaranteeing you were going to have a race, they would improve upon things to get, by the time you got to the end of 2026 in this contract. Just
as
one problem.
As much as we adore Phillip Island,
yeah,
it is a little bit racetrack in the middle of nowhere that everyone loves, but it also is one of its charms is that it is kind of from a bygone era.
It's also
exactly. Sebring International Raceway is the same exact way in my line of work.
For context, Phillip Island is only accessible via a single carriageway bridge. It's pretty much inaccessible on race weekends, and it's 2 hours away from Melbourne. And that's the biggest
bit of a hike
anywhere near it. That is not ideal from an infrastructure standpoint. Apparently, Albert Park is as well is getting a £200 million reinvestment very soon. So the murmurs are is that could they make Albert Park raceable for bikes in the future? Because there's murmurs they might try and double up. Like, I think it's ridiculous. Like, there's no way you could.
You're better off just trying the bend. You're better off just, like, trying any other place besides Albert Park or another street is track in Australia. Hell, you might as well dig up that concept for, like, remember when they were going to build, like, Bathurst 2, like, this permanent motorcycle circuit at Mount Panorama, like, 10 years ago, and it never happened?
I think it actually might be safer to run the bikes at Bathurst, because that way you get thrown over the wall instead of thrown into it.
Yeah. Like, there's also murmurs they might just do a race in Victoria instead, but apparently the organisers behind Albert Park have already asked Dorna, do you think a bike race could be feasible? So, the main hurdle apparently would be like the road work around the track, and you'd have to cut down an awful lot of trees, which is not a good look for any environmental concerns in modern times about cutting
when
down
is
and felling
cutting
up.
Cutting down trees.
No one's here for that in big 2025. Ask Las Vegas about that. The locals loved their wildlife being cut down. I say wildlife.
You'd have to redo the whole of the runoff in the final sector, the whole of the runoff in the first sector, the middle, the start of the second sector.
Yep. There would be the thing is, though, Albert Park doesn't lack space. It just lacks infrastructure to make it happen. But, like I said, the track's got £200 million coming in to make it more feasible for Formula One. And with that money, they're now sitting there going, well, while we're here, it's worth asking the question. So basically, because Phillip Island is a logistical nightmare, because its infrastructure isn't great, and it's kind of not a high-drawing Grand Prix, there's a lot of murmurs that it might not get re-signed. Please don't.
That would be such a shame. It would be like saying, like, yeah, we can't. It's asinine to me. It's asinine to me that this doesn't draw in fans, because I figured, like, this would be a place where you want to go out of your way to Phillip Island on that one carriageway that takes you 2 hours away from the heart of Melbourne just to get there, because it's MotoGP at Phillip Island.
Let's put it to you this way. Even in the case of when Casey Stoner was around, and that was pretty much a guaranteed win back in those days, they were still only getting 50,000 on race day. It's not a great turnout. And it's less than that now. Like, if you're
Dorna, take Phillip Island and push it somewhere else.
The problem is as well, apparently, another problem is that because they've put Indonesia on the calendar, a lot of fans in that part of the world are now choosing that over going to Phillip Island straight up.
A track that, while very pretty, just like Phillip Island, was also, like, having its own infrastructure trouble when it first launched.
Yep, it still is. It's still struggling to get people through the door. The gloss has kind of worn off on Indonesia a little bit now, and they're now figuring out how to get people. Apparently, the tickets are ludicrously expensive, which is the big reason why. Indonesia is not a rich country in that sort of sense. Different kind of crowd coming into bike races compared to the average working class, average Joe. And they can't get people in for that reason. So, look, it's... For me personally, it's the best track on the MotoGP calendar. It's an iconic round. It would be a devastating shame to lose Phillip Island. Everybody loves Phillip Island.
It would be one of those things that everybody was afraid was going to happen when Liberty Media took hold of the sport.
And then Liberty will be unfairly blamed for it, because this is a decision that's going back a decade. Like, if anything, I've had a lot of shit to say about Liberty Media. They're not the reasons that MotoGP has got people pissed off. This is long-standing donor decision-making that people are now looking to Liberty as a scapegoat for.
We've got journalists behind the scenes begging the riders to form a union to get Dorna to stop doing what they're doing. Begging them.
Yeah. Yeah. They know who they are. And it's a messy bitch, and I guarantee you losing Phillip Island will piss off a load of fans.
Imagine if the NFL was just like, you know, Green Bay, Wisconsin is just not a market that really works for the National Football League. Why don't we try, you know, a second team in Las Vegas? You know how asinine that sounds? If you know anything about the context and the history of the National Football League, even casually.
Yeah, and to the only fan-owned franchise in the NFL, no doubt, as well. Let's not forget. Yep. Yeah, forget that. Couple of bits of news before we get out of here. Moto 3, we finally got a bit more hard details about the fact it is getting a reboot in 2028. So a year after the new regulations for the Premier Class comes in, we're getting a new Moto 3, and it's going to be on Yamaha R7s. It's going to be a one-make production series going forward. I think there was a little bit of... I think there was always going to be a bit of protective safeguarding in place, because there were murmurs, obviously, earlier this year about KTM's future in the sport, which have actually kind of resurfaced in the past week or so. We'll get to that in a minute. But yeah, like, we are now talking Yamaha R7s, one make series, R7 engines, custom frame, I think, but ultimately one make series.
Yeah, Yamaha engine, custom frame, but much less like a prototype in that sense.
And look, this is objectively a good move for many reasons. Number one, it's a lot closer to Moto 2 in terms of performance. I think we're talking 80, 90 weird horsepower.
Weird to say, a lot more horsepower, a lot more torque. And that's probably a good thing in this case, because it means the bikes are going to bunch up less.
Yes.
We're not going to have the severe pack racing that is very fun to watch at Talladega when the rules package is good. Not so much around on motorcycles at every weekend all year.
Yeah.
But also gets them a little closer.
We were loving it for a while, and then we just suddenly weren't.
Well, it's really fun to watch until it isn't, is what I'd say.
The last few years, it's felt like waiting for the big one to happen.
Okay, just like Daytona and Talladega. Mm. But also it gets it closer to Moto 2 in terms of horsepower count, in terms of, you know, what that does to a motorcycle. So I think it's probably a good move in terms of actually preparing people to go up the ladder better.
Yeah, that's definitely a thing. They're going to be keeping this current spec of bike and moving it back down to the Talent Cup level. They're going to apparently repackage it and rename it Moto 4. And they're going to use it there instead in the Talent Cups. Make of that what you will. For perspective, a Moto 3 prototype has got about 40 horsepower and weighs about 80 kilos. This is going to be a heavier bike, a more powerful bike, and as Cam alluded to, probably a bit more raceable and not going to be a pack bunch. Also, it's worth pointing out as well for context. Do you know how much it costs to run a Moto 3 bike for a single year?
About to get to that like as well.
Quarter million euros?
150,000 euros just for the bike.
Yeah. Like they are a baby prototype. Moving them to effectively a production engine, I think, should cut costs quite a bit, which is objectively a good thing as well.
Yeah, yeah. Cutting costs is just objectively something that has to happen for Moto3, because those teams are small. They've only got a handful of engineers. They all need to be paid. The bike alone costing 150,000 euros, barring extra parts, is ludicrous. It's exactly why, like, I'll give you an example. Jakob Rahlström, one of the riders in Moto3, actually had a social media team do him a favor by having a joke about ride for 2026 written on a sign outside the circuit, like he was trying to hitch a ride. Little things like that are cool, but most Moto3 and Moto2 teams can't afford to have that kind of social media marketing on their team because they can't afford to pay them for it. Like, it's just one person who's probably a member of the crew holding a phone. So
Yamaha will also supply the chassis.
Yeah. So that will save some money as well. Definitely. Yeah. This is just an objective good across the board. So, yeah, good news all around there. Also, you may have seen the news in regards to Bajaj, who appeared on TV for the first time earlier this week and immediately said, and I quote, "We are looking to cut KTM's overheads by 50%.
Well, every racing program, we coming for you.
Yeah, like,
yeah, it's the easiest money savings they'll ever get. Yeah, just kill the MotoGP program, which is going to suck.
Yeah, it's a big giant overhead. It comes. It's fresh off the news that Bajaj Auto will take the full KTM MotoGP team and everything to do with KTM. It's a complete takeover in November, apparently. Mm-hmm. They're already owed, I think, 75%, and they're going to take the whole lot by the end of the year, by that once the time that goes through. They want to keep KTM as a brand, but they don't really want to go racing, is the impression that I get. And
KTM, who say that racing is their brand. Well, if they want their brand to exist at all. This
is not
an official
confirmation that KTM is leaving or anything, but it does leave worrying signs. And my thought is just like, wasn't this guy brought in to, like, you know, make sure that all this didn't go under?
Well, that's exactly it, is if you've got creditors to pay, those creditors are going to pull you aside and go, why the fuck are you in MotoGP right now?
Yeah, like any smart person looking at a balance sheet. You're not selling road bikes because you're in MotoGP, because they're in completely different... KTM does well in the adventure category. Yeah. Because
they just announced a new 990cc Supersport with wings on the front.
For who? Like...
if I'm buying a leader bike, I'm buying any number of things not named KTM.
No one is buying a 1 liter performance bike that's a KTM. You buy the 390. That was the one they were doing well with. But no, not exactly what you call reassuring. But the new engine's already ready for 2027. That's a plus. It's something.
Good ship.
Will it actually race? Remains to be seen.
Also, you could always sell it to someone.
And before we get out of here as well, congratulations to Toprak Razgatioglu, 3-time World Superbike Champion. Despite the fact we had attempted murder from Nicola Bulliger across the weekend.
Yes, despite Bulliger's best efforts. I will charitably call that aggressive, is what I'll call it.
Yeah, there was a moment going up the hill through turn 5 where Bulliger runs wide, doesn't know Toprak's. Well, he knew Toprak was on the outside of him, goes wide, makes contact. Toprak gets sent into oblivion. Bulliger takes a long lap penalty, but still wins the Superpole race. It took it all the way to the decider in the end. there was 22 points covering the two going into the last race. Top Rack brought it home in a more than comfortable third to win his third title in back-to-back World Superbike titles as well.
And remember when they lost the Super Concessions chassis at the start of the year? We're like, oh, Top Rack might be in trouble. That lasted about a week.
Yeah, that was a bad weekend. I mean, really.
beatings. Came back. Copious beatings.
Top Rack won 20 races this year, including 13 in a row in the middle of the year, tying his own record for Superbike wins in a row. Brilliant rider.
I hate that Rider of the Year is going to have to be annoyingly close again, because Top Rack was just that good over on World Superbike.
He was incredible. He was absolutely incredible, and he probably won't win it, which is such a shame, because he's had one of the most brilliant multi-black seasons you'll ever see, and it probably won't matter. And yeah, Raptor, I warn you, Top Rack fans are going to be apocalyptically annoying in MotoGP. It's one of the few things that all bike fans agree on. Death, taxes, the sport is dangerous, and Top Rack fans are annoying. Have fun.
Yeah.
Look, man, some countries would kill for that level of passion about motorcycles.
Oh, hell yeah.
Looking at my own right now.
Mm-hmm. The only passion for motorcycles we have is 1,100-pound Harley Davidsons. I mean, baggers are cool. And then you realize that the Indian Motorcycle Company just got sold to private equity.
Oh.
To quote Dre's here, one of Dre's heroes, Bomani Jones, when does private equity make anything better?
Never. It's a great phrase. I should use that one more often. But
absolutely.
Yeah. It's the reason why I'm fun employed.
Well, also worth noting, the new Panigale V4R debuted today, and I can't wait to congratulate Niccolo Bulaga on going perfect next year. Literally going undefeated.
He's going to win 13 races next year.
Top Rack's graduated. Where's Niccolo Bulaga's challenge going to come from?
Nowhere. Moving on.
End of discussion. I like Ike Lecuona as a rider. He is not Bulaga. Bulaga was genuinely terrific in Worlds this year. Was unlucky not to win the title. Because remember those two DNFs he had at Assen? Probably wins the title if it wasn't for those two. But that's bike racing for you. I think that's about it on this one. Oh, before we go, all the best in your retirement, Jonathan Ray. It's a real shame we couldn't see him in his final race. He was injured in the Superpole race after a big accident. But a genuine Irish sporting legend, quite possibly the greatest superbike rider of all time. 6 consecutive championships, over 100 wins, over 220 podiums. A superbike rider for, 17 years, and he was outstanding from the moment he debuted in British Superbikes to the moment he's hung it up with Yamaha now. A genuine legend of the sport, and I know he's a big family man. He's going to love retirement with his kids, Jake and Tyler, and I know he's going to be a very happy man that's all come to an end. Bit of an end of an era. Top Rack graduating, Bautista's now on the Customer Barney team, and Jonathan's retiring. Kind of a weird one, that, isn't it? There we go. That'll about do it for this episode. MotoGP will be back next weekend as the fireworks go off in the background. Happy Diwali, everybody. We will be back next week to talk about the Malaysian Grand Prix at Sepang. Anyone for a kick? Until then, I've been Dre Harrison, they've been Cam Buckley and RJ O'Connell. Until next time, thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you guys next week. Sayonara.
Later, y'all.
Anyone for an Alex Marquez double?
Mmm.